topics this morning. First up is House Bill 2070, and with that, we will start with Michelle giving us a lot of information as to what this bill is about and why it came down from Policy Committee with no recommendation.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Good morning. You will recall that House Bill 2070 was anticipated when you passed out the Employment Relations Board budget. We didn't yet have it in our possession because it was still with the House Business and Labor Committee. The bill raises, increases the answer filing fee in contested case proceedings before the Employment Relations Board from $100 to $250. And this particular provision is expected to raise approximately $13,200 per biennium. You'll see a fiscal impact statement also in your materials before you. And that those funds in the budget that you passed will be used to partially fund an administrative law judge position. The bill also does a couple of other ancillary things, which creates a separate account for the Employment Relations Board. The bill, as written, enables the Employment Relations Board to retain interest earned on that account. However, recall that the budget that you passed did not anticipate that particular portion of this bill, so this bill will need an amendment and declares an emergency effective on passage. This bill was referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means without recommendation from the House Business and Labor Committee. There was a lot of discussion about that, and there are a number of folks who might be able to speak to that discussion in the audience.
I see a few labor and management goons in the building, so I expect that we'll be able to get some words of wisdom.
And with that, that's pretty much my introduction. If there are questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Thank you. And the first item that I would like to do, and Senator Whitson will give me a vote on this, is to make the amendment to transfer this to the general fund rather than the account in the agency. That doesn't approve. I just need the amendment.
Okay.
So I appreciate an amendment to amend Section 4, Line 28, by deleting prior to the period the word account and substituting general fund. Right at the very beginning of the sentence.
On which? I'm sorry, say again, Section 4?
Page 3, Section 4.
You're looking for a motion as stated?
Yeah.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Edwards.
I move that the committee amend House Bill 2070, Section 4, Line 28, to read, strike the word account and substitute the words general fund.
Prior to after the period in the account, prior to the period in the sentence, since they're to account.
Yes. the first word account prior to the period.
Thank you, Representative. Is there any discussion on this?
Yes. Why are we doing this?
Why are we doing it? Because the powers to be say. No, go ahead then.
Mr. Chair, Representative Galizio, recall that as a general policy matter, when interest is retained by individual boards and commissions, that reduces, rather than being credited to the general fund, that reduces the amount of dollars available for short-term borrowing and therefore increases the state's short-term borrowing costs and interest costs. So by keeping these dollars available in the general fund, the state as a whole can make use of them for purposes of short-term borrowing.
Right. I mean, that's an argument to do the amendment. I'm sure
right.
There's an argument to oppose the amendment, which would be, I mean, what was the reasoning? I mean, I wasn't there in the discussion to read the reasoning to keep, why it was written the way it was written.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, as part of the governor's recommended budgets, the proposal was made to establish this new account separate and apart from the Department of Administrative Services and allow the agency to retain approximately $20,000 in interest to be used to support their ending balance.
Mr. Chair.
The reason for and the reason against.
Okay.
Mr. Chair. I'm going to follow along with my colleague, Representative Galizio, and I apologize for being out in the hall when you started this discussion. Is this following a standard practice with all agencies? Because we have been a little bit, I'd like to use a word that I heard on the floor the other day, loosey-goosey. I thought that was a profoundly technical legislative term. About applications, for example, in some cases we were taking policy, we were taking the fiscal ramifications of policy bills out of budgets. In other cases, we didn't. And I'm just trying to figure out, is this a uniform application to this agency? Is this anything unusual? Are we doing the same procedure to all agencies with respect to the retention of interest?
Mr. Chair, Senator Johnson, it's my understanding that for a number of agencies where this is proposed, this biennium, we are giving them similar treatment in terms of making sure that interest stays with the general fund this biennium. I don't know. I can't speak to prior biennia and what the policy
has been. No, I'm just talking about this biennium.
And I think the key issue is the ability to get money at the cheapest rate we can in the process of borrowing money when necessary. Do you have any recall of this, Representative Edwards? I think you served on the policy committee. Was this discussed?
You know, without having my notes in front of me, I can't remember if there was much discussion about the actual where the interest goes. We certainly had a lot of testimony about the actual bill itself. And but as far as...
Okay.
I don't recall that discussion about where the interest goes.
Okay. No other discussion. Are there objections to the amendment? Representative Belizio?
I object.
Huh?
I object.
You object?
I'm fine.
You're fine. And
I'll
courtesy
vote. I'll reserve the
right. Yeah. Says nothing about the whole bill. With that directed. We are at this point now in public hearing. I'm going to close the work session that we were in and open just a public hearing on House Bill 2070. With that, do we have people signed up anywhere to testify on this?
Oh, there's no list. Oh, I'm sorry.
Mr. Chair, while we're taking this little break, with the indulgence of the chair, I would like to introduce a young high school student who is spending the day job shadowing me, Amanda McEwen. Amanda, can you stand up? Amanda's from Scappoose High School and has an interest in politics and decided to come down today and see how it really works.
You found nobody better in the building to shadow than Senator Johnston.
You have tennis shoes on today?
Good luck.
We'll get to the agency after the... there are two names that I recognize somewhere in the building before. So who would like to lead off and oppose? Mr. Green.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Jim Green with the Oregon School Boards Association. And I guess I'm the management goon you referred to earlier out in the crowd. This bill was in the House Business and Labor Committee, where Ms. Bodkin and I, who's at the stand with me today, formed a work group to take a look at this issue. And the funding of ERB, and I've testified before this subcommittee before on this agency's budget, the agency performs a very vital role in employer-employee relations across the state, whether it's local school district, city-county level, or the state. And one of the things that's unfortunately happened with this agency is they have reduced FTE and it has increased time for cases, caseload, and a variety of things that have hurt employer-employment relations across the state. House Bill 2070 was introduced, I believe, by the governor to deal with an issue trying to get some funds for the agency. And when we looked at this bill from the management side, all it does is raise the answer fee. And remember, ERB is a quasi-judicial agency. And what happens is, on an unfair labor practice, a significant majority of these are filed by the public employee unions. And so in order to answer it, you have to file an answering fee. It's like a court. And one of the things we took a look at was to make them equal, it didn't make great policy sense to us. We said, you know, since somebody's accessing the agency and requiring the agency to do the work, we thought that fee should be higher. Mary and I were appointed to a work group by Chair Schaffler on this, and we sat down and said, you know, let's really look at what this costs to do the paperwork. Let's get the agency some additional funding. Let's get that permanent ALJ back, the administrative law judge. We sat down and we came up with an idea of a $400 filing fee, a $300 answer fee, and then a $150 appeal fee from those ULPs where an administrative law judge may make a decision. And we had agreement. Mary and I, and we sat down with the agency folks and said, how would this impact your budget? I took it back to my folks on the management goon side, and they all agreed. I got cities, counties, everybody, special districts to say, yeah, this is what we can agree to. We understand it's going to increase costs. We brought it back, and unfortunately, I don't think Mary had complete buy-in from her group. But we needed to get the agency funded. Taking a look at this bill, it makes it equal, which I don't think is the best policy decision, but we realize the agency needs funding. So we are reluctantly accepting this bill to do that. We would have liked what we had agreed to, and I think Mary would agree with us, but unfortunately other powers in the building didn't see it that way, and we couldn't get buy-off from all the public employee unions. They had guaranteed us that they would work to get general fund appropriation to backfill to the amount that we had in our original agreement, and I don't see those folks in the room today. And I think that's a question that we will ask them as we see them in the building. But it is important to us to get this agency funded.
You're suggesting you want me to amend it again up to where you were.
Mr. Chair, I would greatly appreciate that. That was the agreement we had. I think there are other folks that Mary may have to go back to on the labor goon side of the bill and explain that to them. But as far as the management side, we thought because it's a quasi-judicial agency and someone's accessing it, there should be a differentiation in the fee. We realized it needed to be bumped, but to make it equal, we don't believe is the best policy, but we realize this agency needs funding, and this may be the way we have to do it.
We're going to be asking, or I'm going to be asking a question before too long, and I might as well start with Mr. Green on this. And that is, why doesn't this kind of take a normal legal process that loser pays?
Mr. Chairman, you know, that's an interesting discussion, and I believe there was an interim task force that came out of the 2003 legislative session from a budget note that was attached to the ERB budget to form a task force on funding ERB that then Tom Chamberlain, who was with the governor's office, chaired, and Paul Gamson, who's behind me with the agency, was a member of that as well. And I don't know if Mary, were you on that task force? I don't remember Mary being there. And we took a look at that, and it had equal representation from the management side and the labor side. And the loser pay idea was obviously something that the management side of the table put on there, and it was beat down, I would say, pretty profusely by the other side of the table, and we couldn't get agreement on that. Loser pays is one of those things that has been kicked around a lot in the judicial system, and this being a quasi-judicial agency, it's been looked at several times. I don't know whether that's the best policy decision to go to, and I think it's something that may need to be looked at. But what we, Mr. Chair, would still advocate for is raising the filing fee, the answer fee, and the appeal fee to the amount that we had agreed upon previously. And Chair Schaffler sent that down to this end of the building to have that discussion.
One additional question from me, and then I think that maybe some of the questions. choose to wait a little bit to ask them, but how many, what percentage of the of these actions are initiated by the management side versus the...
If I remember numbers correctly, and I know the herb staff is sitting behind me, and that may be a better question for them, but I think it's upwards of 80% are filed by the public employee side, and it's less than 15% are brought by management.
Let's stay in your world here, where you are with the education community.
How many are filed by school boards?
Yeah.
I think, Mr. Chairman, in the last 2 years, and this is within our office alone, because the Oregon School Boards Association, as you know, does do at-the-table bargaining for school districts and community colleges. And I can think of only two out of the last 2 years that have been filed by school districts or a community college. One was a community college, one was a school district, Mr. Chair. The rest that I'm aware of come from the public employee union side.
Senator Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Green, it would seem to me, and correct me if my thought process is awry here, but any answering fee by the public employers is simply a tax on the people, because that's where the money's coming from. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Whitson, that would be correct. The funds, at least for school districts and cities and counties, are public taxpayer dollars, so the funds that go to file an answer come from those funds that are given to agencies by the public taxpayers.
Thank you. Follow up, please.
Follow.
The thing that I'm really struggling with is, why should someone, a person or an entity, who is charged with something, be charged a fee to answer it? I mean, that is that's beyond my comprehension. I mean, it's something that you have the right to face your accuser, but you don't have to pay to face your accuser. I just don't understand that concept, and perhaps there's a lot about labor law that I don't understand, and some that I just simply don't accept. But I don't understand that one.
And Mr. Chairman and Senator Whitsitt, you know, I think it goes back to this being a quasi-judicial agency. We tried to mirror some of the things that go on in our judicial system, where if a civil matter is filed, somebody has a filing fee, and then there's an answer fee that has to occur. And part of the reason for that is when you touch an agency, let's say like ERB or the courts, with a filing, there's administrative fees and processing that has to go on, and it was a way, I think, in the court situation or in the ERB situation, to help recognize the cost of that. I think if you talk to Mr. Gamson and his administrative team from ERB, you know, $250 to file and $250 to answer sure does not cover the cost of what happens when an unfair labor practice, a ULP, is filed either by a public employer or a public employee. But I think the policy decision is to say the parties or the players in the action have to help fund at least part of the administrative cost of those actions going forward. That doesn't necessarily say I agree with it, but I think that's the policy decision that's been made with regard to that.
Thank you.
Mary, if I can interrupt you, and we've got legislative counsel here, and I know the only thing on his agenda today is to talk to us.
That's right.
I'll bring Elsie up first. I don't think you have to run away. I don't think he bites, but you may.
He's been known to.
Has he?
Oh. But only when you're disagreeing with how he drafted something.
Oh, okay. Good morning, and thank you for coming down. Sorry to break into your busy day. The question, at least a question that I have that we were discussing, is a question of why not have a... loser pays instead of a filer pays. I mean, if I may have to pay, but why not have recovery?
Chair Jensen, for the record, I'm Charlie Cheek from Legislative Council. And I think that the question you ask really is a policy question. I do think that I just heard a couple of the comments of the previous speaker, and I tend to agree that it seems to me, and I did not draft this bill. This bill was drafted by our labor expert, who was grabbed by Boley about 2 months ago and is now the deputy director over there. So I'm stepping in and trying to give you as much insight as I can. But my feeling is I do draft significant legislation in regulatory boards, which are have been charged essentially with by the legislature with paying their own way through impositions of fees, depending upon the nature of actions in front of the boards, there may be fees related to it. I think that may be the impetus behind this change, is to try to have the system pay for itself as it goes along. But again, in my opinion, it's not a legal question, it's a policy question.
So it could be the other way.
It could be, certainly. It's okay, a policy choice.
Right. Okay. Do you have any question from LC, Representative Whitson?
Thank you, Chair Jensen. I believe he just answered my question.
Okay. Thank you very kindly. I'm sorry to
not a problem.
Interrupted you.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, the reason I'm late getting here this morning is I just left his office on another issue. This poor guy has been run up and down the building by you and me and everybody else. Charlie, thanks for coming in.
Thank you. Yes. If I'd have known that you were the one in his office, we'd have gotten him here sooner.
Yeah, probably.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Mary Botkin, and I'm here today representing the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. And I'm going to speak on their behalf first, and then I will sort of report what happened in the work group separate from that. We are absolutely in concurrence with Mr. Green about the increases in fees. And let me tell you sort of our perspective. From our perspective, ERB provides a venue to resolve issues between labor and management that is non-confrontational. And it eliminates other more disruptive labor disputes that could result in decreased services to the public. We see ERB as a venue to resolve issues in a judicial-type environment where both sides are obligated to kind of live with the decision, like it or not. And that makes sense to us. AFSCME Council 75 signed off on the increases in fees, as did most of the other public employee unions, as a way to properly fund ERB, or to at least partially properly fund ERB to get the ALJ back that we need, and to not take money out of the general fund. We were not unanimous in that decision, and one individual was very aggressive in pursuing options other than fees, believing, I think, in good faith, had a fundamental belief that ERB should be funded entirely from the general fund and that nobody should have to pay a fee to access ERB. Utilizing the model of the NLRB as an example. In a perfect world with lots of money, that would happen.
Right.
You know, this is not a perfect world. There's not a lot of money.
In a perfect world, there would be no reason to have ERB.
That's right. In a perfect world, you're absolutely right, Mr. Chair.
By definition, it's imperfect.
You know, in a perfect world, we wouldn't even need unions because, you know, the employers would be wonderful and I would be out of work, as would Jim. But it's an imperfect world, and what we were trying to do is to find a solution. That solution did not come to fruition, and I think that the chair of the substantive committee threw up his arms in dismay and said, let's move it down to Ways and Means and see what we can do with it down there. I can tell you that a majority of the labor coalition would still support the increased fees as a way to fund ERB. However, there would be some vocal dissent to that. And I think, as a way to move us forward. We're prepared to accept the bill as it is, though we don't like it. We're prepared to accept the budget as it is, though we don't like it, with the understanding that after session, Herb will once again bring us all together and try to find a long-term resolution about how you fund Herb. And there are some of us who are absolutely committed to funding them appropriately, even if it means increased fees. You know, we do not utilize them nearly as much as some of the education unions do, but when we need them, we need them. And we probably utilize their professional staff as a way to resolve conflicts rather than increase them. And so I agree with everything that Mr. Green has said, mostly. I understand Senator Whitsitt's frustration, and I think that Senator Whitsitt and I just have to agree to disagree about the need for Herb and how it should be funded. I know that most of the unions are prepared to sort of step up and pay some increased fees if that's what it takes to fund this organization, but or this agency. But I don't know. I guess, you know, I've sort of broken the first rule of good lobbying. I don't know if we have the votes on this subcommittee to increase the fees and move it forward. So, you know, you should never ask a committee to do something unless you know where your votes are. And I haven't done a vote count, and I don't know if Jim has. So, you know, we're just sort of here to say, you know, we had an agreement, it didn't work out. We're going to continue to try and find an agreement. And I think this budget, while inadequate, will at least keep the pieces together for a little while longer, and we'll move forward from there.
Mr. Johnson.
Thank you for your testimony. As a practical consideration, we are dealing with really a de minimis amount of money. And my concern is that we're wandering in the weeds of a policy discussion when we're talking about this much money and a kind of essential function. just as Ms. Bodkin described, it is the forum for labor and management to work out some of their issues. When I think about the jaw-dropping amounts of money that are in some budgets, it's sort of embarrassing to be here talking about this. It feels a little like GSPC, where we get so carried away with the policy implications that we forget it plays an important function. We ought to figure out a permanent funding source and just get on with it. Every session that I've been here, we fight about the Herb and what their budget is and whether or not someone has to pay to answer. The real fact of the matter is that absent this fee bill, the agency continues to be crippled. And if it's crippled, why not just end it and say that we don't have an agency? I'd like to just get on with passing the fee bill. And if you guys form a work group outside to continue to talk about funding issues for Herb, Godspeed. Good on you, and I hope you come back next session with a solution.
And Madam Chair, or Mr. Chairman, Senator Johnson, you know, I think that's probably where we're going to land on this. You know, we are talking about a de minimis amount of money, but a de minimis amount of money in this agency means a lot.
Yeah.
And I think you've been here quite a while, Senator Johnson, and have dealt with your budget since your time down in Ways and Means. I've been with the Oregon School Boards 15 years now and have dealt with this issue. And we've got to get our hands around this. And we tried one interim, and I think we'll try again this interim. I mean, we're willing to swallow the pill and take House Bill 2070 as it sits because it is a de minimis amount, but it means what it means.
Yeah.
You and I are in a complete agreement.
Yeah. It is what it is.
Senator Bates.
I'll start by saying I agree with my good senator to my left here. And she's not usually to my left, she's usually to my right. So, you know, but I agree with this. But the issues you deal with are not de minimis.
Yes.
You deal with issues that could be extremely expensive for the state and for the people of Oregon. And the board does a great job of dealing with those and not tying things up in courts for years and years and years at huge cost to the public and to the state. So, you know, to me, this is, again, de minimis money. We ought to pass it out, call it good. I don't mind everybody having a little bit of skin in the game. And on your comment about not counting votes in committee,
we're helping you right now.
Let me tell you something. In this session, we don't worry about that anymore. We can't get things to Ways and Means. Okay, full Ways and Means, because we haven't counted our votes. We're pulling bills from committees now and amending them on the floor next. Okay, it's the wild, wild west. We're having a good time. Okay, so Chairman, don't feel bad about that.
Amending bills on the floor really scares me.
I believe that's the next step. The first step is pulling bills from committee, and the next step is amending them on the floor.
We're not, you know, and if I can just say, you know, it wasn't my bill that got pulled from committee. I was shocked and, you know, amazed that occurred, but it did. And I've been, as Jim, I've been doing this for 20 years. This really is a budget that just boggles my mind when I deal with the Department of Corrections budget and I deal with human resources budgets. This is my most problematic budget. And if I can just say, Senator Whitson, one of the things, and I know that this is troubling to you, and this, my comments are not meant to make you feel better, but understand that any time there is a judicial process, somebody has to pay to respond. And in the judicial process, we pay public defenders to represent the guy who's charged. I mean, somebody is always going to pay for the response. And that's just the way it works, and you don't have to like it.
It's not going to.
The way all of you are kind of, excuse me, pussyfooting around on this particular issue.
It's like Lucy.
Yeah, it's kind of like
Lucy.
Will
you accept a motion?
To what? Move it?
Yeah.
Not until I. Sure, go ahead.
Are we in a public hearing or are we in a work session?
We're in public
hearing.
We'll open a work session.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In the need for expediency in this process, I would move that House Bill 2070 be sent to full Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation.
Okay. Senator Bates has moved that House Bill 2070 be moved to the full Joint Ways and Means Committee with a due pass recommendation. And I sense that Senator Whitson has some concerns he wanted to follow with on this.
Thank you, Chair Jensen. To me, it's a policy question. The policy committee just simply passed on this and sent it down here without a recommendation. And this policy decision is not just imperfect; it's the wrong decision, in my opinion. I don't see. As I said before, I don't see why any entity or person should be required to pay to face their accuser. Which is something that I cannot go on.
Thank you, Senator. Representative Byer.
I don't have all the information we had before with me, but I was trying to remember what the other proposal raised. Was it about double this?
It raised an additional $25,000 for the biennium.
And Ms. Chairman, Representative Byer, if I may, that's on the agreement that we had, which was the 400 filing, a 300 answer fee to a ULP, and then an appeal from the ALJ to the IRB of $150. That would have raised, I believe, the $25,000 for the biennium.
Representative Galicia.
Mr. Chair, I think I understand what Senator Woods is saying, although I think the key term in quasi-judicial is quasi, so I think that's for the. But that probably doesn't help. Anyway, I'm willing to hold my nose and vote aye to get this bill through, although I think it's woefully inadequate and just sort of this penny-wise and pound-foolish mentality. And I think Senator Bates really hit the nail on the head. But I will vote aye to pass it through reluctantly.
I have a couple of concerns. Either the world out there has changed dramatically since I was involved in labor management issues and with IRB, or we have really sugarcoated the intensity of emotions and feelings that go with some of these. And I would observe, and my reason for asking the question about why not loser pays all, is that we are, as I understand it, and correct me if I'm wrong, we're talking about contract violations.
Alleged contract violations.
Well, yes, that's true, but that's the win and lose situation out there. Whether it's management that brings it or whether it's labor that brings it. And I have been involved in a whole bunch of these hearings or these things. I think we were 8 for 9 when I was on the faculty at Blue Mountain. So, and at the same time, my wife was serving on the school board at Pendleton 16R, and they had about the opposite.
That Sunday dinner was funny.
It made for very, very interesting pillow talk, believe me. She'd come home with this grandiose sort of thing, and I'd say, sweetheart, you're going to lose. You violated the contract. To me, right is that the person who violates the contract as held by the administrative law judge or whoever is, wherever the decision, however it is agreed to be made, is the one that should be responsible. Now, I'm, expeditious with this, I'm going to support the bill and move it out. And I need to know who wants to vote no. One?
I'm voting no.
Everybody no. And Senator Whitson. Okay. With that, I was cruel enough with the agency last time they were here and was duly chastised by my vice chair for being so. We will...
It's like stomping bunnies, Mr. Chair. There's no sport in it.
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
With two elbows, Senator Whitson and Representative Colonel.
Mr. Chair, just a clarification on Senator Bates' motion. He didn't note as amended.
As amended. Thank you. The motion, as taken down by staff, was as amended. That's what good staff are for, is to quietly correct us when we make mistakes. Okay. With that, thank you very much. I hope you're not offended that you weren't asked to come on. Thank you. We'll close that work session then and get back on some protocol here. And Deborah is here to enlighten us a little on where we're at with House Bill. I think it's House Bill 5013. And we're in a public hearing on House Bill 5013 at the present time.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I sent out some revised information last night. I'm sure you didn't have an opportunity to go through it, but I've left hard copies at your places in response to the conversation we had yesterday about feelings by most of the committee that there's not enough money, the budget's not large enough for this agency to look at unlicensed contractors and for the consumer education. And in response to Representative Crummell's and the Chair's concern about the ending balance, I made an attempt at calculating what kind of ending balance the agency might need to determine what kind of flexibility you would have if you wanted to change the LFO recommendation. I haven't changed the LFO recommendation. And so today, I can certainly walk through that additional information if you like. or, and I'm a little confused since we're in a public hearing and not a work session.
Great.
About what we're doing.
Madam Chair, I have had a chance to look through this, and I want to thank LFO for doing some quick and I think pretty doggone good work. The net result of this is that you went forward into the 09-011 biennium and have determined that, and I hope that the agency agrees, that they probably have about $1 million in rough terms, a little over, $1,100,000 in rough terms of ending balance money that could be applied to the two areas we're most concerned about, which from my point of view were field investigations and consumer education, which would allow them to work in a more expeditious way on their key performance measures. And you appear to have laid out to us three options. One option being increasing the part-time investigators in our proposed package from 5 full-time and 5 part-time to 10 full-time, adding 5 more. Or, because we can't do both, opening up a package 806, which was the agency's original request, of operating a little differently, opening up an office in Central Oregon, one in Southern Oregon, and adding several positions, which would be a significant increase in funds, almost $800,000, but would offer an opportunity to have a better investigative arm for this operation. The third option you've laid out for us, an increase in education program, which would bring in a clerical staff to allow the person presently running the program to be more proactive in actually getting education done, and in addition, offer some budget money for TV advertising to really get out there in the public's knowledge this agency is there and available to them for consumer protection. It leads me to a couple of questions. I appreciate your work. First question being, which of these two packages the agency think, and this is probably the agency should answer for us, is of A and B here, the increase to 10 full-time investigators versus the original package. What do they think would be the most effective in bringing out key performance measure down?
And I'm actually going to exercise the prerogative of the chair and invite the agency up to be available for Senator Bates' questions. You want to get all the questions out first?
Yep.
Okay.
So the first question for us is those two. Which of those two packages would work the best for the agency in their thought pattern of what they think is the best way to go? And are we cutting their ending balance a little thin by doing that or not? And the second one is the consumer education program proposal. Will that, in fact, do you believe, raise that? Our goal up to hit 60%, although I've already spoken to you about what that target should be, but at least get you towards that 60% target. So the real question is, what's the most effective of the two packages as far as field investigations are concerned? Does it cut your budget too close? Number two, is the consumer education program increase going to get you there? Understanding that this is going to have some roll-up cost to potentially after 011, but from my point of view, that's okay. Now, this is funded by fee increase if necessary at that point. If you're getting your job done, I think people would be glad to pay it. I honestly believe that legitimate contractors want this program to be successful. It protects them and the public. It's a long speech, and I'm sorry to get all involved in that. Thank you,
Senator Bates. Obviously, I erred by stepping out right then because a long speech. I should have been here to...
Fortunately, you're on
tape, so I can.
It was inspirational, Mr. Chair.
Yes, I can pick that up.
It was.
Okay. Other questions, issue, comments?
I had embedded in my speech a couple of questions for the agency, Mr. Chair, and I hope they would be stepping forward to answer those now.
Mr. Chair and Senator Bates, the first
please.
Question had to do with which proposal does the agency prefer? Craig Smith with the Construction Contractors Board.
Thank you.
The proposal 1B, which would allow for the agency to have 10, or rather 12 full-time investigators, 2 support staff, and a supervisor in charge of those folks. It would also allow for a office in Central Oregon and one in Southern Oregon, makes sense to us. It's an aggressive proposal. It's much more than we've had in the past, but we believe that the demand for searching down and stopping unlicensed activity, and frankly, I think this service would also help us with our customer and our consumer notification mission, is the one that we would like to see you fund. We think it's effective.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Johnson.
I presume this is a working supervisor.
Yes, Chair, Mr. Chair and Senator Johnson, that'd be correct.
Follow-up question?
Follow-up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I make the assumption that the LFO's recommendation is to be funded out of ending balance is acceptable to you, too. We're not talking fee increases here.
Mr. Chair and Senator Bates, that's correct.
Thank you. Does it make a difference? No. The other question is, does this make your ending balance too skinny, too thin?
That's a good question, Senator Bates and Mr. Chair. We're concerned about the ending balance. We believe that it is a little bit small. It's smaller than we've lived with in the last few years, but we've seen smaller, and we hope that, frankly, with the additional enforcement activity, we'll keep those license contractors up. We'll have an additional license contractor, so we believe we could live with it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Johnson.
I presume that the Central Oregon and Southern Oregon will be local hires, and they will be on the job living in those communities.
Mr. Chair, Senator Johnson, that would be our preference.
Okay.
Good point.
Second or third question I asked was about, Mr. Chair, if I may.
Senator Bates.
Was about the consumer education program. There is in that $200,000 for, I believe, TV advertising and a clerical work to free up the person who's doing it now to really get out there and start doing the job, not be filing papers and counting paper clips, but get out there and really talk at trade shows and really get the message out that you guys exist. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, Senator Bates, that's correct.
Mr. Chair, I'm going to follow up. Do you believe this will start moving you towards your key performance measure of 60% target?
Well, Mr. Chair and Senator Bates, we believe it will move us towards that 60%, and with a little bit of effort, I'm sure we can bump that up.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Colleagues, while I was out, or Deborah, while I was out, where did you leave us with this?
Mr. Chair, members, I offered to go through the attached supplemental information that I sent out in view of that I sent it out late, and Senator Bates indicated that he had gone through it and actually probably presented it better than I would have. Unless there
That's are pretty unlikely.
Other questions I could answer. I guess if I could, Mr. Chair, I'd like to emphasize that the ending balance calculation is my estimate, and I don't have a lot of history with this agency, and the area that I have concern, you see the third item listed, 2007 substantive legislation. I used the agency's material to come up with that $297,000 number. I do believe the list was incomplete, and so I guess that's one of the areas of risk is if there are other pieces of legislation that pass this session that require them to increase their budget. If those don't have revenue with them, it would impact the scenario. But I don't have any more specific information than that. I did ask the agency to review the calculation, and again, this all happened relatively fast, so I appreciate Senator Bates asking the question. I guess I would still have some amount of concern that the agency does indicate that they think it's a little thin, and off of that is, I suppose, a bit of caution.
The ending balance is a little thin? Is that what?
Mr. Chair, yes, the estimated need of, I calculated of $3.9 million in order to generate that $1.1 million of flexibility that you could amend the LFO current recommendation.
Okay. Talk to me about thin, please.
Mr. Chair, the Construction Contractors Board about 4 years ago lived through a time when we had to lay off staff. And frankly, the staff we had to lay off were involved with consumer protection. we needed to process increased number of unlicensed contractor and complaints against contractors at a time we were losing revenue. And you know what we're talking about. That's what happens when we start to go through a recession. We've enjoyed wonderful times in the last 3 years or so. All indicators at this point is that we're going to be able to have a fairly steady growth in Oregon, and we think that that'll help us with our ending balance. Nevertheless, because of the pain that we went through with our service levels back in 4 or 5 years ago, we have some amount of anxiety over having a ending balance anything less than 6 months. I think the ending balance here would be slightly less than 6 months. So exercising caution, I think, is worth talking about. Nevertheless, our renewal rates of renewal have exceeded our projections over the last several years, and our rate of new contractors have exceeded our estimations. And we think that bodes well, particularly as you look at the kinds of things these enforcement staff will be doing, which is making sure that folks can't work illegally. We think that'll increase the rate of renewal and at least try to keep up the new contractor level as high as we've estimated for this budget.
Representative Blasio.
Mr. Smith, any idea if all the policy bills pass? I mean, not that you would know the figure off the top of your head, and they're sort of, you know, you don't get additional funding. Any idea what that would mean? Because I think that was part of the LFO.
Chair Jensen and Representative Blasio, several of those bills are will have a neutral impact because they'll, from a revenue standpoint, because there will be fees associated with those bills. For example, the certification, building certification. So that will raise revenue. There may be some spending authority that needs to be added, but that won't affect the discussion here, I don't believe.
Representative Bates, thank you
once again for the promotion. Mr. Smith, can you internally adjust your budget if you find yourself in a situation where fees have not kept up to where you thought they're going to be, where you had to make cuts? Do you have to come back to the emergency board for that? Do you have to come back to the legislature for it? Or can you adjust it internally?
Yes. Mr. Chair, Senator Bates, there are two things that we can do. The answer is yes, we can. Obviously, we can curtail expenditures. But the other question, I think this is where you're going, is can you do anything about revenue? And statutorily, we have a cap. You've placed a cap on license fees of $295. A couple of years ago, we had a license fee at $295. And we were fortunate enough to, about 2 years ago, reduce that down to $260. And the law requires the agency to look at its fee structure every year and adjust it appropriately. Right now in the budget, we don't see changing that fee either up or down. If we didn't spend more, we probably would have recommended reducing it. And if we need to raise it a little bit, we have that some $35 to play with. And, of course, if we raise it anything, we have to come back to the Assembly and explain why.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Follow up.
So what I'm hearing here is you can't change anything on the revenue side without coming back to us, which is the way most agencies work, and it's a reasonable way to work. But you can affect your expenditures if you need to. So if you've gotten, I mean, I don't want to put you in a position here, or, you know, that you're in trouble a year from now or 8 months from now. You can pare back these programs without any direction from the legislature. If your budget looks like it's having trouble, you can say, no, we're not going there. So what I'm hearing, I think, is it's a little skinny, I'm a little concerned, but I can adjust if I have to without coming back here, and my agency is not going to get in trouble. But we may not be able to do everything we wanted to do with these packages because we may have to pare them back if financially we can't go there. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yes. Mr. Chair, Representative Bates, Senator Bates, I should tell you that I lived through in my early days with the agency as a subordinate to an administrator that cut it a little bit too close. And I learned from that experience because then Mr. Cadell spent a few hundred dollars over budget, and he was required to make up that money out of his personal funds. That's a very good lesson, and I'll see to it that that doesn't occur to me.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Is this going to be a budget note?
It's always easy to hire and hard to fire, and that's something we all face. But you know, it sounds to me like these are budget proposals, and I thank LFO for working so hard and so fast on this, that what I think I'm hearing is agents can live with them, actually want them, and would look forward to this as an opportunity, but are realistic about it and ready to cut back if, without us having to intervene, if the agency doesn't have the money it needs to run these programs. So I think on that basis, I feel pretty comfortable about this. But I want on the record that you have the ability to cut back and not get the agency in trouble if things aren't going well.
Mr. Chair and Senator Bates, that's true.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Whitson.
Thank you, Chair Jensen. Mr. Smith, is it correct that your agency has about $5 million in potential revenue in collections?
Chair Jensen and Senator Whitson, I haven't looked at what we're trying to collect lately. I've got my collections officer here. I could answer that question if I could go back and research it. I can tell you that we do have a substantial amount of money that has not been collected. We collect at a rate of about $250,000 a year. Because of the types of people we go after who in many cases have a dog and a pickup truck and no real property and are transient, sometimes we don't collect as much as we'd like. If a person has property, and if a person has any kind of connection with by paying taxes, we're fairly successful because we go through Department of Revenue and we do file liens against property. So if there is a large amount of money indicated, and there is, that has not been collected, it may not be a ripe area to pluck because those collections are sometimes very difficult to get.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Follow up.
Mr. Smith, does your staff age those accounts? Do they grade those accounts as to collectability? Do you ever use private collection services to pursue those? It would be interesting to know where you have $5 million in potential revenue hanging out there. And I understand your constraints that how much of that $5 million is even potential revenue depends a great deal on the age of them and how long they've been there. But I would wonder if there isn't a potential there to perhaps use the private collection sector to pursue that and actually enhance your revenue as well as enforce your sanctions.
Yeah, is it? Mr. Chair and Senator Wesley, it's a good point. And the answer is yes, we have a fairly effective, I call it robust collections program, where we first go after the individual if they're a licensee. That's our best hammer, because if they're a licensee, we can take their license away, and that's huge if they don't pay the debt. Secondly, we'll go after their tax returns, and we do that by referring the accounts to Department of Revenue, and that can be very effective. When both of those fail, we have the ability to go after property, and we'll put liens on those properties, and then when those properties sell, they come back, obviously, to us, sometimes years, some cases decades later. Thirdly, it's the hammer of not allowing individuals who owe money to get a license in Oregon. So from time to time, we'll penalize people. They'll move down to Arizona. They'll work for a year, maybe 10 years, but eventually they come back to Oregon. And there they are in the database, whether they've been written off or not. They owe that debt with interest. And it's surprisingly to see the checks come across the counter for the full amount of the civil penalty, and then that person now is a licensee again. So no matter how old it gets, we get those. And then lastly, when all else fails, we turn all of our accounts over to private collections, and they do what they do. And in some cases, they're very successful.
One clarifier. Do you have any idea, Mr. Smith, how old those accounts might be when you finally do turn them over to a private collector?
Mr. Chair, and Senator Whitsitt, I'm hearing from staff that it's approximately 12 months old after we get done with our efforts and done with the Department of Revenue's efforts.
Thank you.
Representative Byer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. When I look at this proposal 1B that you're talking about, and it's a phased-in approach, and that's the cost of this biennium, do we have any clue what we might be looking for, looking at out in the next biennium for golf?
The phase in on this package, you're exactly right. We start the position in September as opposed to July, so it'll be a fairly small, but no, that to directly answer your question, I did not calculate the 9/11 costs. I tried to factor a percentage increase in the ending balance for salary adjustments and inflation in 9/11 to the extent that I captured the complete amount of phase in. It remains to be seen.
Thank you. You want to start us through the walk us through, and we'll go with motions on each.
Mr. Chair, yes, I would. The one thing I would like to point out in the information trying to get at the issue of revenue, you'll notice the top section where it says revenue expenditure comparison. The agency's 0709 revenue estimate, you can see, is lower than the current biennium estimate. So they're actually got a lower amount of revenue, 9% reduction, which is why in the ending balance, to get to address what I thought was Representative Crummell's issues yesterday, I only used a 5% reserve, if you will, for a downturn in revenue because the 0709 revenue was already reduced. So to the which kind of softens maybe a little bit how thin it might look. Otherwise, I would have gone with, I think Representative Crummell mentioned it's, 5 to 10% number. I went with 5% because of the forecast was lower than the actuals. And then, Mr. Chair, yes, I'd be happy to. I think we opened a public hearing, though, so if we could open a work session.
We will close the public hearing and open a work session. Thank you.
Excellent. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. And to the Chair's recommendation, since the LFO recommendation that you have in front of you would be different than what you just discussed, if we go package by package to approve, then someone could make the motion then to either amend the recommendation with the options that were in the paper. Then I can adjust the numbers for you before it comes to full, and I don't have to bother you again if that's okay with you,
that's,
Mr. Chair.
That's what I'd like to have, and I assume that Senator Bates is going to make those motions.
Yes, sir, I will do that. I don't know how I got sucked into doing this whole thing, but I'm here to do
Senator Johnson's been real quiet today.
Yeah.
You get penalized.
All righty. Then starting in with the policy package 100 dispute resolution, as you heard from the agency yesterday, it creates two limited duration positions to provide some increased services, a fast-track mediation where the folks can go out to the job site and hopefully take care of problems prior to before it becomes a formal complaint, and the other is to provide increased assistance to the elderly. The package also adds $16,000 for some specialized training for the new staff as well as the existing staff. The Legislative Fiscal Office is recommending approval. However, we do recommend that the start date be pushed back to September 1st instead of July to allow for recruitment activities. And also, my strategy in phasing the positions in is to save a little bit of money for a technical adjustment I have at the end. So, Mr. Chair, the LFO recommendation on this package would be $277,872 other funds, two positions, limited duration positions, 1.83 FTE.
Mr. Chair, I would move package number 100 as amended by LFO with a total of $277,872.
Senator Bates moves the package 100 as amended by the Legislative Fiscal Officer. Is there questions on that? Is there any dissent? So ordered.
Package 101 is entitled Enforcement.
Mr. Chair. I do. Can I go back for just a second?
But of course.
On the limited duration positions, are you going to hire out these services, or you intend to hire limited duration people that would provide the mediation services? I'm just trying to get a sense of where you think you're going to get these people.
Chair Jensen and Senator Johnson, we would hire probably new staff, with public staff that haven't been with the agency before, and they would fill those positions for that limited amount of time. if the program works the way we believe it will and we're able to make a case that they ought to be kept, we're going to come back and ask that you consider them as permanent positions.
So you would get, follow up, Mr. Chair?
Follow up.
You would get people with some background in mediation, that would be one of the minimum qualifications, or a retired lawyer or something along that line?
Mr. Chair, okay. Senator Johnson, that's correct.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Package 101 Enforcement Program. This package of requests would provide additional expenditure authority to do sweeps, quarterly sweeps. Our recommended modification is to reduce the requested in-state travel amount by $20,000 based on analysis. Looked like they had enough money in their budget. Therefore, our recommendation is to increase it by $52,000 other funds.
Mr. Chair, I would move package 101 as suggested by LFO for the enforcement program.
Thank you, Senator Bates. Senator Bates moves package 101, the enforcement program, as recommended by the Legislative Fiscal Office. Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Johnson.
I would just like to get on the record that you think you're going to be able to get to all parts of the state with this $20,000 reduction. I'm inclined to support the motion to support the LFO recommendation, but I just want on the record that you're not going to be concentrating your activity in, you know, Salem and Portland, but you're going to get out to Klamath Falls and places away from the valley.
Mr. Chair, Senator Johnson, that's correct.
Thank you. Is there any further discussion? Any objection? Hearing none, so ordered.
Mr. Chair, members, package 102 is the education program that we've discussed a lot. The package, as proposed, was for an additional position and some additional advertising money. In the GRB, the position is limited duration, and our recommendation is that the position be permanent, given the current staffing level of the section and the amount of responsibility they have. And I think in terms of their communication plan, which, as I note in the recommendation, have specific objectives, strategies, and tactics to educate consumers, and that they believe that by educating consumers, then they can then reduce the amount of complaints on the back end, which was something that you all seem to be pretty interested in during that part of the discussion. And having the position be limited duration, I think would affect their ability to be successful with that. So, and again, phasing it in for a couple months. I think this was the area that you all discussed, and so in the supplemental information, the agency proposed an additional position and $200,000 roughly of additional advertising to do television advertising, which would, if you wanted to amend this particular package, you would be adding $293,011 and one position.
Mr. Chair, I would move that package 102 education program, as recommended by LFO and with the additional recommendation by LFO of $293,011 and one full-time FTE be approved.
Senator Bates moves that we accept LFO's recommendation on package 102 with the addition of, help me, the dollars.
Well, that's, Mr. Chair, that's my question. Are we doing 285 plus 293, or are we doing 293 and a full-time position versus 285 and a limited duration?
Mr. Chair, Senator Johnson, we're adding two. So it would be the 293 plus the original recommendation, and it would be two positions.
And one's a limited duration and one's a full-time, or they're two full-times?
They will both be permanent full-time positions.
Okay. One last question, Mr. Chair.
Follow-up.
It occurs to me, given the amount of construction boom that's going on right now, that this might be a perfect area to see if the agency would qualify for public service announcements, and to see if you could even get some of the production values of the ads done as pro bono. This is an area that affects lots of Oregonians, and I think with a little outreach, you might be able to get the stations to help cooperate.
Chair Jensen and Senator Johnson, we believe that's correct. With this additional funding, we believe we can soften up some of our TV folks and actually get some of that free advertising.
Okay. Heard the motion as amended. Is there represented by?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm a little nervous about both of these proposals, one B and this one, together. And I know that he has indicated that their choice would be 1B. I mean, that would be their highest priority, would be 1B. And I think maybe I might not support this motion because I'm not sure I want to go to adding both into it.
Yeah. Thank you. Any other objections? We are on 102 as it has been amended, Representative, and I think you have the numbers there.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
I'm fine.
Okay. No other objections. Representative Meyer is going to vote no. That would motion carry.
Package 104 is the titled Information Technology, and this gives the agency an ongoing base budget to implement their to replace their computer and software on a regular basis. In the past, they've had it in, and then they back it out as one time, and then they have to come back and ask for it again. And so we're recommending approval to establish a base budget for hardware and software replacement.
Mr. Chair, I'd move Package 104, Information Technology, as approved by LFO.
Senator Bates, Package 104, Information Technology, as approved by LFO. There questions?
A question, Mr. Chair.
Representative Crumble.
Thank you. Mr. Smith, are you working with, you used to be IRMD, now it's EISD. EIO or whatever it is. Old McDonald's Farm. Anyway, are you working with them as far as your upgrades are concerned and your web presence and all of those the various technology things that you're doing?
Mr. Chair and Representative Crummel, we have a small IT department. They have been to the full extent of what is required. Working with IRMD, I've required that they find out whatever the best practices are that are suggested by Department of Administrative Services, and that any replacement of our equipment will be performed only in accordance with those best practices, even if they're not required. And so the answer to the question is yes, we are working with them.
Yeah, thank you.
Other discussion? Any objections? Hearing none, so ordered.
Package 105 is titled Administrative Services, and this would give the agency a position, a revenue agent one position dedicated to debt collection, and it also appropriately classifies two positions based on a review by the Department of Administrative Services. And in the narrative here, identify that as of December 2006, the agency had over 5,000 collection files totaling $4.9 million, which I think is where Senator Whitkett got that number. The idea behind this is they've taken a position, a compliance specialist, I believe, and half-time this person is dedicated to trying to collect debt. But the files keep going. This would give them an appropriate position with the appropriate skill set to go out and collect these files, freeing up that half-time position to work on compliance. We recommend the position be approved as permanent as opposed to limited duration, since this is clearly an ongoing function for the agency. Change the effective date to September 1. We also recommend abolishing the agency has a 0.17 FTE account in one position. It's got like 4 months budget on it that they'll never fill, so we recommend abolishing that to kind of offset the position count increase and also pay for the reclasses. So that would make the revised recommended amount for this package to be $98,774 and 0.75 FTE. There would be no position count associated with it.
Chair, I move acceptance of package 105 per LFO recommendation.
Senator Bates moves the passage of package number 105 per the Pellicle recommendations. Discussion? Objections? Hearing none. So ordered.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That would bring us to the section titled Budget of Fiscal Office Adjustments. The first one is Package 806, which is the field investigators. The reason it's identified as an LFO adjustment is this issue came up after the governor's recommended budget was put together, and it's my understanding that BAM and governor's office is in agreement with making this adjustment. This is where we discuss the field investigators that Senator Bates talked about earlier. This particular version simply continued what the agency has in place already, which is to replace their limited duration positions with permanent. It was by part-time, by full-time, and the associated SNS. In your discussion earlier, you discussed, since there is additional dollars, approving option 1B, which would have 12 full-time investigators, an IT specialist, an office specialist, and a program manager, in addition to some additional funds to open satellite offices so that they could cover the state. What that would do would increase the amount you see here, and again, I apologize to do the math ahead of time, but it would increase the package you see in the recommendation by... I should have brought my bifocals.
$795,867.
Thank you, Senator Bacon. 6.25 FTE.
Mr. Chair, I'm going to say this carefully. I would recommend acceptance of the Package 806 as modified by LFO in what we're now calling Package 1B. With the caveat that we understand this can be something that the agency not only wants, but which can they can adjust if they need to, if they're running in trouble with their ending balance. And I appreciate greatly the work you've done on a very short notice, which I thought is brought forward. I think the tools this agency is going to need to really get their job done and meet their key performance measures.
I have... one question. The additional personnel that are going in here, is it the recommendation in your motion that these be permanent positions or they be limited duration?
It is, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
Permanent. Permanent.
You've heard Senator Bates move the passage of Package 806 with the 1B amendment?
Yes.
Yeah. Is there any question or any discussion? Is there any objections? Hearing none, so ordered.
That brings us to the most exciting package, 807, which is technical adjustment. Here I've just done a little moving around. I've also increased their budget by $57,000, which is funded by the phasing in of the new positions, and this is to align their budget based on current spending with respect to merchant fees and collection fees. I also want to say for the record that I'm also adjusting the beginning balance by $1.6 million based on the analysis that we did earlier so that in the budget system the ending balance will reflect, hopefully, the new calculations.
Mr. Chair, I would recommend or ask for passage of Package 807 as recommended by LFO.
Senator Bates moves passage of Package 107 as recommended by LFO. Is there discussion? Any objection? Hearing none, so ordered.
Mr. Chair, then that completes the budget portion. I could move into performance measures really quickly.
Please.
Attached.
We're scheduled to be out of here.
Okay. Attached is the form. It reflects. I'd like to ask your indulgence to work with the agency to, based on what we approved today in packages, I believe that the performance measure targets you'd want to see increased based on that.
Yeah.
And so,
yeah.
With your permission, I'll work with the agency to reflect those increases to the version that we bring to full.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, that was just a comment I was going to make. Given what really is a breathtaking series of increases, these enforcement targets ought to be way up.
Mr. Chair, I want to thank you and LFO for moving with what I consider in this business lightning speed to make these changes. We've put together a robust package for this agency, and frankly, we hope for and expect some results. You've had your hands tied behind your back trying to get the job done. I think we've cut those knots. You've got your hands open now. I hope you can go forward and do what we need to have done. We want legitimate builders protected, and we want the consumers protected, and I think you've got the tools to do it now. Yeah. Mr. Chair, do you need a final motion on this?
Yes.
I'm going to try to get Mr. Chair, I would move that the performance measures as we expect them to be amended by LFO and the agency before we reach full ways and means be accepted.
Thank you. Is there any discussion?
Chair, I just did one quick question of the State Council.
Yes, Senator Whitson.
When in the current biennium, you've taken kind of nickel-dime the FTE to gather some money. Did you take that into consideration when you're in your projections for Bill 9 or the next biennium?
Mr. Chair, Senator Whitson, yes, I attempted to do that to the extent that we'll see how successful I was.
Thank you. Representative Kremel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I know that the agency doesn't have control over information that people read when they get it, or people hear when they see it, or see when they see it, or hear when they hear it. Anyways, they have no control over that. But in my world, 50% and 55% is a failing grade. And so I would, and I think we've given some tools here that will hopefully improve that. But for key performance measure number two, I really would like to see those numbers driven much higher. I don't know exactly how you do it, but I think there, if at all possible, you've got to drive those numbers up because that just doesn't seem high enough for me. The other one is on number seven, and 85%. Again, in my world, that's a B. I would really like to see those numbers driven up above 90%. I think we need to get you into the A level, and hopefully the package that has been put together with the able assistance of LFO and the committee has will get you there, but I really would like to see those numbers up above 90%. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Edwards.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd just like to comment on key performance measure number two, the homeowner awareness. I share the sentiment of many on the committee that number needs to be driven up. I would also like to state, though, that I'm not sure how realistic 95-98% type numbers are, and I would like the agency to be strategic in how it raises awareness because as we know, as elected officials who have spent a lot of time talking with the general public, it is very hard to move awareness. And so I would hate to get into a position where we end up with a key performance measure that's so aggressive that we really get into a situation of diminishing returns on the dollars spent. So I agree, it needs to be higher. I have a hard time imagining that 95% is.
But your question is how much higher?
I'm not sure how much higher.
Yeah, that's your question.
We need to be improving, though, for sure.
I think the department and everyone at LFO has heard that as we proceed with this. Any other discussion? Any objections?
You need a final motion.
I need a final motion.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 5013 to full ways and means with a due pass recommendation.
As
amended.
Senator Bates moves House Bill 5013 to the full ways and means committee as amended with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion? Is there any objection? Seeing none. So ordered. And we need to do I have anybody who wants to carry this on the House side? I'll carry it in full. Okay, I'll carry it on the House side, and Senator Johnson will, or Senator Bates will carry it on the Senate.
I would appreciate that, thank you.
And we have one correction to make. Michelle didn't hear that I would, when I said this, that I would carry House Bill 2070 in the full and in the House, and that Senator Johnson would carry it on the Senate floor.
That's correct. Thank you.
I'm sorry. Sometimes I speak too quietly. We are adjourned. Thank you.